Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Monday, March 23rd, and over the weekend, the Steelers made more moves. Kevin Colbert, y'all, going to work. We'll talk about the moves he made, including the signing of tight end Eric Ebron, what that means for the Steelers' offense. Does that mean Vance McDonald has his replacement on the roster? Those are the questions we'll be talking about. Also, they made sure to re-sign safety Jordan Dangerfield, boosting the safety depth just a little bit with a player that has experience. And finally, they pulled off an unlikely trade with the Baltimore Ravens, getting a backup interior defensive lineman, Chris Wormley, for a swap of late-round picks in the 2021 NFL Draft. Also, it's Mock Draft Monday. Who won from the Locked On listeners? We'll see right now. Let's get into it. All right, y'all, happy Monday. I know everyone probably had a calm weekend staying in with the nation dealing with the coronavirus, but hey, hope you did it safely, you're doing all right, and you're listening to this and kind of either relaxing or at work and at peace. So I'm going to help you get through this Monday by talking about some big moves that happened over this weekend. The Steelers were not done. I know it was kind of crazy. I had to re-record Friday's show to address the signing of Stefan Wisniewski at guard and center. But Kevin Colbert said, I am here and I am not going out without a fight. He goes and signs Eric Ebron, 2 years, $12 million. Big move at the tight end position. This gives the Steelers a second potential starter at the position. And I say potential because I think he is the starter. I think he's already going to supplant Vance McDonald at the position. But what this does is both of these guys are athletic threats and are capable of being starters on an NFL team alone. So putting both of them on the same roster at the same time gives you two dynamic threats at the tight end position that could be very scary for NFL defenses to consider. Both are tall. Both are fast. Both can catch the ball in traffic and keep moving. That's exciting. Now, I'm not going to be some salesman and just give you rose-colored glasses and say, hey, Eric Ebron's the best tight end in the world. No. The guy does have a drop problem. You look at it. You look at his career. He's dropped several passes that he should have brought in. He was drafted in the first round by the Detroit Lions. And you look at his career there. There's a reason that he wasn't brought back. He did well with Andrew Luck, but then fell off last year considerably, understandably, because of what was going on in Indianapolis. But you know, you look at Eric Ebron, and to me, and this is not meant as a slight towards him, but it's made more of a just an actualization. He to me is a rich man's Xavier Grimble. Now, hold on before you want to throw something at your phone for hearing me say that. Understand that Xavier Grimble, in his rookie and second years, when he caught the ball and was moving, he looked dangerous. He looked like a guy like, hey, you know what? If that guy can put it all together, that could be a really good tight end in the NFL. But of course, he never did. He didn't become an accomplished blocker. He didn't catch the ball consistently enough. And he fumbled balls into the end zone. That's a whole other story. But the point is that Eric Ebron brings the athletic talent and is a much better catcher than an Xavier Grimble. Now, he's not the best blocker in the world, and that's something that the Steelers are probably going to have to accommodate for. But he gives you a threat in the middle of the field. Now, imagine this. The Steelers come out, double tight end formation, two wide receivers outside the numbers, and a single back to help Ben Roethlisberger. With two tight ends, you got Vance McDonald and Eric Ebron, both of these guys can move. You're not covering them with buck linebackers that can't run in space. You're not covering them with little guys either. Teams are going to have to put their best guys on them at times if they want to deny them to Ben Roethlisberger, especially when it comes to the red zone. These are both guys that can cut, that can catch in traffic. They can catch higher passes, and especially Eric Ebron, he can score touchdowns. And that's the bottom line, what the Steelers need to be able to do this year. But so besides anything else, the Steelers need to find ways to put points on the board. They went from being the best red zone offense in 2018 to being one of the worst red zone offenses in 2019. So with problems arising with the offense, they figured, hey, let's get Ben Roethlisberger something to work with. So you go to Eric Ebron. Ebron has 27 career touchdowns. 13 of them came in 2018 when he got to work with Andrew Luck. And he only started 8 of those games, though he played 16. So, I mean, starts were kind of nominal offense. But we're getting away from the point here. 750 yards, 13 touchdowns. That's the last full season that he played and that you saw what he contributed. Now, if he brings that to the Steelers offense, that's going to be nice. Now, imagine this. You got a guy with 700-plus yards and 13 touchdowns, along with a tight end like Vance McDonald, who in 2018 with Ben Roethlisberger had 610 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's a lot of production at the tight end position. That's 1,300 yards and approximately 17 touchdowns. Now, of course, these were both starting tight ends. I'm not saying this is exactly what's going to happen, but these are the kind of threats you get. Vance McDonald may not be anywhere near the top tier of tight ends in the NFL, but he's an athletic talent, and he brings something to you that you can use in the offense. Now you balance out the tight end position, because here's the other thing. When Vance McDonald went down, it was slim pickings for the Steelers, especially with Jesse James leaving. That's why they went and got Nick Vannett. Nick Vannett didn't work out. He got signed by the Broncos, so he's definitely gone. Artie Burns to the Bears also. He'll hope that guy can bounce his career back. But when you look at Ebron, he's going to be able to come in and say, hey, you know what? If Vance McDonald goes down, you still have a number one tight end for most of your formations. And vice versa. If Ebron goes down, then you got Vance McDonald who can step up, and you know he's a number one tight end. So it really balances out the roster for Kevin Colbert. Also, got to talk about other moves they made, of course, signing Jordan Dangerfield adds safety depth to the roster and gives you a guy who can call out your defense. And that's something that I saw Mike Tomlin press Dangerfield on in training camp over the years. He would specifically watch him in drills and be like, all right, Jordan, and kind of put the pressure on him to call out the right plays and make sure everyone was on the same place and also make sure he got to the same spot. I felt like it made like they were going to bring Dangerfield back because I didn't think anyone else would see that much in him in free agency. And, you know, he's got a home in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I think that just makes sense for the defense. But the other big move is the trade for Chris Wormley. Chris Wormley coming from the Baltimore Ravens. Wow, the Steelers traded with the Baltimore Ravens. What? They swap late picks. I believe the Steelers get a 7th-round pick in 2021's NFL draft, while the Ravens get the Steelers' 5th-round pick in the 2021 NFL draft. But Wormley is a run stuffer. He's a guy that's going to provide depth to the defensive line. He's going to be probably with Tyson Alualu lot on that second grouping of interior defensive linemen. Remember, the Steelers really don't use the 3-4 as much anymore. Maybe I'd say, you know, one in every 5 plays or so, maybe if you look at the percentages of those alignments. But when I look at what Chris Wormley bring in, now everyone's probably wondering, well, is he Javon Hargrave? And I'll tell you right now, no, he's not. He's not a pass rusher. He's not a guy that's going to get after the quarterback like that. He is a guy that's going to plug up the holes in the middle of the field. He is a guy that's going to challenge the gap and free up space for Vince Williams and Devin Bush to roam around. That's what you want from your interior defensive linemen. You want them to clear the path so that your playmakers at the linebacker position can come up and make the plays. That's a huge reason why Jack Lambert looked so good in the 70s. He was able to play behind the steel curtain, and they would destroy offensive lines, allowing him to do whatever he wanted behind them. That's what Chris Wormley's going to be asked to do when he's coming in and subbing in for Stephon Tuitt and Cam Hayward. Doing this will allow the Steelers to be like, hey, you know what? This drive's getting a little lengthy. Our guys have been on the field. Let's get Tuitt and Hayward off for a little bit, get them some fresh legs. Now in comes Alualu and Wormley, and you know you're not just throwing in, you know, Dan McCullers in and getting destroyed in the middle of the field and teams are able to run on you at will. And then this way, hopefully, the Steelers are looking and say, hey, you know what? We won first down. We won second down. It's 3rd and 8 right now. Let's bring in our pass rushers, Tuitt and Hayward, who have fresh legs because they got to rest on the sidelines because we got a run stuffer now. So that's what the Steelers are probably thinking with the trading to get Chris Wormley. It's going to be interesting to see what that is. But there's a bigger picture to look at this now because they addressed multiple positions now in a matter of days. What does that mean for their outlook into the NFL draft, and are they done? All that right after this. All right, we're back. So here's the thing. You're probably thinking, like, you know, man, is Ebron the biggest splash here in the free agency? Yes, he is. Now, is he an all-time splash? No. But what Kevin Colbert was really doing was something that he did last year. He solidified the rest of the roster. Remember, last year, the Steelers needed a veteran wide receiver to come into to a young wide receiver room. Oh, here comes Dante Moncrief. Oh, they needed a guy inside linebacker because John Bostic was gone. Oh, here comes Mark Barron. Oh, they needed a cornerback because they really don't know what to do with Artie Burns. And oh, here comes Steven Nelson. That's what Kevin Colbert did last year, and though Barron and Moncrief are already gone, it at least gave them the option to say, hey, if things don't work out, we know we at least have depth at this position. That's kind of what's happening here. They lost Ramon Foster. They got Stephen Wisniewski. You know, they couldn't sign. They didn't want to bring back Nick Vanette. They got Eric Ebron. Oh, they lost Javon Hargrave. They got another backup in Wormley. So you look at that and you gotta say, man. Oh, also, you know, also you're not sure about Rosie Nix's health. Get Derek Watt. But you see what they're doing here, and also the re-signing of Jordan Dangerfield. But you get my point. This is what the Steelers are doing. This is what Kevin Colbert's trying to do. He's like, hey, I don't want to go into the draft with any glaring weaknesses. I don't want to force myself into a pigeonhole where I'm saying, you know what, I have to draft this position because it's such an obvious need. Now, they really don't have to go out and say, hey, let's go get a guard because we are so thin at guard. Let's go get a safety because we're so thin at safety. Let's go get a tight end because we're so thin at tight end. Now they're going to look and say, all right, who presents the best option to us right now to boost us overall as a team? Who's going to help us get more touchdowns, or who's going to help us get more stops? And that's what Kevin Colbert really wanted to do here. And I look at this, and it makes a whole lot of sense. This is why he's a legendary GM. He makes smart moves. And again, he didn't really bankrupt the Steelers in doing so. We're all thinking that the Steelers salary cap, as well as the NFL salary cap overall, it's all going to explode next year because of the new CBA. It didn't come this year with coronavirus, and also the CBA, you know, it took a while to get signed. So it was only $198 million of a cap. But if you look back just 10 years ago, it's basically doubled. Like, and they're expecting that with this extra game, and that was also without an extra game being brought in, without an extra playoff game being brought in. That's going to be ad revenue. It's going to be TV revenue. It's going to be overall team revenue. And that's going to be something that's going to increase the salary cap, allow teams to spend more. And it's going to make all those contracts that they're pushing down the line, you know, the restructurings of all these different guys. Now they're going to be able to afford that money. Cause you're probably thinking like, oh man, how are they going to afford that? Well, now they're probably looking at it because that's going to increase. Now it may not increase as much as they want. It may go more than what they want, but the bottom line is this gives them options. And if it comes down to it, they'll make tough decisions later, but this gives them the option to say, hey, you know what? In 2020, we're competing. That's what the Steelers are thinking right now. You look at how they went and made sure they got Bud Dupree. That means edge rusher is not a need. I still don't get why certain people are still mock drafting the Steelers edge rushers in the early rounds. I don't get it. Why are you doing that? They're not looking for an edge rusher in round two. They're talking about signing Bud Dupree long term. So like if they sign him to 3 or 4 years, forget that, buddy. You know, it's just not happening. But I know people are probably stuck on it. So that's why the national media is not paying attention to that. But I just look at what they're bringing to the table here as far as balance across the board. You know, getting Ebron is a really balancing move to the tight end position. I look at his playmaking ability, and you again put him and McDonald next to each other. Now McDonald isn't going to get the attention of the top safety. He might not, you know, or a top linebacker. You know, teams are probably going to have to be. He's going to be an afterthought, which could open up the opportunity for him to make more plays. I sent this as an audio for the Broncos, for the Locked On Broncos podcast. But one thing that I thought Nick Vanette's advantage was that he would you know, because the Broncos signed Nick Vanette. His advantage is that no one was ever looking at him, and you know, and I don't think it should look badly upon him for his lack of production considering the Steelers offense last year. But the same thing goes for Vance McDonald. Vance McDonald had the second highest of yards per yards of separation per route in the NFL, according to Next Gen Stats, NFL.com's Next Gen Stats department. Go to their website and look up NextGenNFL.com. You look up their stats, you can look up receiving stats and look up separation. And who's at the top of the list? Vance McDonald's number two. Now, granted, tight ends are all going to get number two because usually people don't, you know, you don't press a tight end. They're too big for that. So there's tight ends are a different position altogether. But among tight ends, he's right up on the top of the list. So don't think that he's not getting open. Don't think that he can't make plays. Look at the reality in that the Steelers quarterbacks just didn't use the tight end position enough. I mean, I did a breakdown on how he was wide open in the middle of the field a lot. Now imagine you got Ben Roethlisberger. He's going to be hitting that guy. Now he's got another option out like that. So now you might be able to come out and say, hey, you know what? We got two tight ends out here. You're going to have to cover them both. Oh, we're running the football. And now you got a safety up in the box dealing with a tight end who might be bigger than him. that's the kind of threat that they're posing here. So I like that. And now, you know, I know a lot of people were you know, may not have been heeding my warnings that this was not a draft to address the tight end position with the second round pick. And maybe some people were just so in love with Cole Kmet. Now you can really get off of it. Stop it. Don't draft a tight end in the second or the third round. Or really now, even the fourth round. Just don't. If you want to get a guy in the sixth or seventh round, sure, but it just it makes sense now, because now they can say, hey, you know what, let's address running back. Maybe let's boost the offensive line. Let's get a safety that we like. You know, but the tight end position, this is just not the class to do it. Let's dip into the positions that it is the class to do it in this year. That's this just that the tight end position just isn't. Wormley, again, addressing interior defensive linemen. I know that was another pick that a lot of people thought the Steelers really needed because of the loss of Hargrave. I don't think they really did in the first place, but now they definitely don't. Again, all they needed was a run stuffer. And Josh Taylor and I, on the Friday episode of this podcast that came out just last week, we were talking about this, and we said they should get a run stuffer, because if you get a run stuffer, that allows for the Steelers defense. Also, doesn't that just say that we know what we're talking about here? We called that out, and it happened. We said maybe they should get a veteran tight end, not draft one. Ooh, they go and get a veteran tight end. They go and get a veteran defensive lineman. We also said they should get a veteran offensive lineman. Boom, they got Stefan Wisniewski while we were recording the podcast. I mean, so just to show you how in tune we are here at Locked On Steelers. Pay attention, y'all. We be knowing stuff. Also, you know, we do have the benefit of talking to some of these guys and being closer to organizations. So it's not like we're like geniuses. It's just that, you know, this is part of our job. But all seriousness, you know, again, I think the big picture here is that Kevin Colbert has kept his options open. He's not a guy that's forcing anything down the throat. I mean, when you look at being forced into situations, you look back and you know what? I'm going to point out, you know, this past decade, you know, there's talk about, you know, you look back at the past decade and the draft, the first round draft picks. 2010, Marquise Pouncey, hit. 2011, Cam Hayward, hit. 2012, David DeCastro, hit. 2013, Jarvis Jones, big whiff. And why did they draft Jarvis Jones? Because they needed an edge rusher. And although Jarvis Jones did look like the part, I mean, I think he led the SEC in sacks. He was dominant at Georgia. His combine numbers stunk, but they thought his production would pan out. But they put themselves in the position where they really needed an edge rusher. Jason Worlds retired. They didn't have an answer for that. And, that they led to picking Jarvis Jones and so, you know, you look at the times when they were more balanced, they didn't have to force themselves into a position. That's when the better picks came. 2014, Ryan Shazier hit it out the park. 2015, Bud Dupree, I wouldn't say hit it out the park, but that's a hit. The guy had double-digit sacks last year, and you got a franchise tag on him, so that's a hit. 2016, though, they didn't have an answer at the cornerback position, and they needed a cornerback badly, and they thought they were going to get theirs in William Jackson III. But it appears that, you know, like, hey, you know what? We think Artie Burns could be the guy. Let's take a shot on him. And he just wasn't. And it seemed like that was a year where they really put themselves in a position where they needed to draft a cornerback. They did, and it wasn't their man. But 2017, you came back and you're thinking, you know what, should they draft another inside linebacker to boost to work with Ryan Shazier? They go and get edge rusher TJ Watt. The rest is history. 2018, they went and got a safety in Terrell Edmonds. Not the position that everyone thought they were going to address right there, but they went and did that. So, you know, you look down the line, it all makes sense. 2019. Now, 2019, that's different. They traded up to get Devin Bush. That was like they pigeonholed themselves. Remember, they also signed Mark Barron to make sure that they didn't have to pigeonhole themselves into that if it didn't work. You know, it wasn't going to be like they were going to be picking, Mack Wilson, the guy from Alabama in the first round. Though he did play well for the Browns, I'd say. But the point is that you look back at the misses, it's when they forced themselves into a position that they had to pick, and they overdrafted it. Or they drafted it at a position that was already picked a lot by when they passed up on opportunities to draft other players that weren't in a position that were so picked up on. Again, that's why I think running back is the first pick here, and it doesn't change. I think there's four running backs that if they get one of the four, they're going to be in a really, really sweet spot. But that's where that is. Who are they going to pick? Well, that's why it's time for Mock Draft Monday. Right after this, I'm going to go into our top mock draft. Well, we're going to first talk about the newest mock draft on the mock draft on the draftnetwork.com, our partners. Then we're going to get into who won Mock Draft Monday. Right after this. All right, y'all, it's Mock Draft Monday. Here we go, baby. So, first of all, got to go through the newest draft on the mock draft on the Draft Network, the newest mock draft. It's Joe Marino coming in with his What Would I Do NFL Draft mock draft 1.0. Now, started off pretty standard. Joe Burrow going to the Bengals, Chase Young going to the Redskins, Jeffrey Okuda going to the Lions. That seems to be just across the board what happens everywhere. So going down the line, 18th pick, did the Dolphins pick someone better than Minka Fitzpatrick? They got CeeDee Lamb. That boy bad. But I'm not going to say he's Minka Fitzpatrick, but that guy has a lot of potential, a wide receiver. Look out for CeeDee Lamb. Also, I mean, he has them drafting Tua Tagovailoa, so that'd be a heck of a 1-2 punch in the first round. He also has them drafting Lucas Niang. Jeez, I mean, that's just a first round, just a lot of talent on offense, just throwing it right, just smack. Here you go. Here's a starting tackle. Oh, here's a starting quarterback. Oh, here's a starting wide receiver. Shoot, that would be a heck of a haul in the first round. At least initially. I always believe in this thing where if you try to evaluate drafts the year of, you're doing it all wrong, because then you're forcing yourself to judge people by what you think they'll be, what they won't be, who knows. So, going on to the second round, who does he have the Steelers picking? Well, again, offensive lineman at a premium. Bengals getting Jonah Jackson, interior offensive lineman from Ohio State, with their first pick in the second round. You saw Josh Jones, he lasted to the second round, but still picked by the Chargers. Lloyd Cushenberry III goes to the Panthers at 38. Again, it's going to be a rough time picking there. DeAndre Swift, first running back off the board at 45. And then the Steelers got a chance to pick a running back, and what did they do? No, they're going to draft another edge rusher. I swear to God, Joe Marino, you've been on the show, man. If you're hearing me now, thank me later. Don't pick edge rushers. What, the Steelers wouldn't do this. What are you doing to me? Ah, killing me. He picks Julian Okwara, edge rusher from Notre Dame. Just they just tagged Bud Dupree. Why would they go and get an edge rusher? It doesn't make sense. Maybe y'all got some inside information. Maybe y'all paid somebody. I don't know. That just does not add up. They're looking for offensive production, and the best thing is at the running back position. I don't get it. I mean, Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins are picked later in this very round. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you passed on all three of those guys for an edge rusher? And not even like a super elite one. One is like, he looks good, but like, you don't need him. Spare me. All right, pick me up, y'all. Y'all got to give me life with these picks. So let's see who won the Mock Draft Monday. Now, I got to say, there was a person who almost won it by unreasonable means, because last week we had that similar situation where there was just a pick that fell way too far, shouldn't have been there, and I gave him the reward. This guy didn't win it, but I gotta give you an honorable mention. Michael Bulas, what the hell did you do to get Tua Tagovailoa at the 49th pick? This guy somehow picked up Tua Tagovailoa. If Tua Tagovailoa does fall that far, I don't know what to do. But the reason I didn't pick you is because you still picked an interior defensive lineman and interior offensive lineman, both of which they just signed. I don't think that will be their primary focus there. They would pick a running back. So I went with someone who did lead with a running back, but also addressed that quarterback spot with an interesting pick in the later rounds. And that person is Bob Murphy. Congratulations, Bob. You're this week's winner of Mock Draft Monday. And let's look at his list, because he addressed a lot of needs for the Steelers. With the 49th overall pick, coming in the second round, he has the Steelers picking Clyde Edwards-Helaire, running back of LSU. I really like Edwards-Helaire. Everyone's probably going to look at him and say, oh, you're at a 4.640. He's probably not that fast. But you look at his tape, man. That guy was outrunning speed demons in the SEC. He's quick. He only fumbled once in his collegiate career. He catches the ball at the backfield. He makes people miss. He has his head up all the time. He's tough. Like everything about that guy. If that's the Steelers pick at 49, you should all be happy. I will be dancing, because I will have called it, because that's kind of like who I have them slotted to pick right now. But going down the line with the comp pick. He has at 102, the Steelers selecting in the third round, Jalen Hurts. Now, here's the thing. If you get Jalen Hurts, this is where I think it's safe to pick Jalen Hurts with that third round comp pick. You get Jalen Hurts there, he's going to push Mason Rudolph. I think he could beat Mason Rudolph in a camp battle right now, simply because of his playmaking ability. I think that alone makes him more of a threat than Mason Rudolph. I mean, this is a guy who led two different teams in college football into the college football playoffs. And that's Alabama, who, you know, he didn't have to do as much because it's Alabama, but in Oklahoma, he was their system. And granted, that was the Big 12, but he also had success in the SEC. Heck, the year that they that Tua Tagovailoa came in after he won the championship and took it over, he got hurt. And if it wasn't for Jalen Hurts, they wouldn't have been able to beat Georgia. They wouldn't have been in the playoffs, or they wouldn't have, at least they wouldn't have the chance to lose to Clemson in the final round. But Jalen Hurts, to me, heck of a ball player. He's, you know, he doesn't have all the tools that you want. He doesn't have the rocket arm, but he has a good arm, and he has the athleticism, and he seems to have a good measure for where people are on the field and processing what defenses are doing. There was actually a really impressive video of him that went up on NFL.com of him talking, I think it was Steve Mariucci, a former coach that was head coach of the Detroit Lions. And he's a, you know, he's been an analyst on, you know, a national analyst for a long time. But Hurst is just breaking down things left and right for him. This is no guy that's just, hey, let me run around and throw the ball up and hope for the best. This is a guy who knows what he's doing. He's a threat. Now, he's not running wise. He's not Lamar Jackson throwing wise. He's not Patrick Mahomes. I think that's unfair to anybody. Nobody is Patrick Mahomes. I'm trying to think of a good comparison. He's not Deshaun Watson. That's better. But he's like a step down from Deshaun Watson, and maybe a guy that can become that eventually someday. But I think in the third round comp pick, that's a safe spot to pick it, because now you get another young quarterback that immediately fills out your quarterback depth issues. That means him and Rudolph are your two and your three. Whoever wins that battle gets the two, and then you have a three that you can at least say, you know what, this guy at least brings X to the table, and you're not going in with Devlin Hodges or Paxton Lynch or someone else. I know Tony's probably going to flame me tomorrow for that, but whatever. Next up, going to address the wide receiver position with the first pick of the fourth round. You know, I think this was smart, because again, wide receiver, heavy year. You don't need to jump early to get one. You can get guys that are threats later in the draft. And particularly, let's look at KJ Hill. KJ Hill coming in out of Ohio State. He's a senior, 6'6". He's 6 feet tall, 192. This is a guy who's going to be able to be able to split defenses. He's pretty quick. He gets off the ball well. He seems to be able to find the soft spots in different zone defenses. I like the way that he, I like his get off on the ball. I like how quick he can be and how elusive he can be, even without the ball, like trying to break open and also just trying to lose defenders, in space. This is an interesting pick here. I don't think he's the guy that's going to be a supreme playmaker, but he's a guy who has solid routes, and when he gets the ball in his hands, he's dangerous, and he's quick to get to his top speed. That's where I see his best thing coming. Now, granted, the one thing that I have against him is that he's not the best hands guy. There's times that he doesn't haul in a catch, and that's just part of his lack of height. He's not someone that's going to go up in traffic and pull it down a lot. So, but again, you're drafting a guy that's probably going to be your fourth option at wide receiver. You know, so I understand that. So it's an interesting pick there. Not someone that I would be jumping off of the bench for, but you know, hey, you got two really good hits early on, so I'm not going to get mad at you there, Bob. Going down the list, Kenny Willicks, I think that's maybe it, but he's an edge rusher. Addressing edge rusher later in the draft makes a lot more sense. And Kenny Willicks, he's a 6'4 edge rusher from Michigan State. Bigger guy. He gets off the ball really well. But the problem is that this, and the reason that he would be a very later round pick, he tries to beat you just with his, just with getting off the ball really well and with trying to knock down your hands. But as soon as someone that has NFL caliber skills at offensive tackle, as soon as they get their hands on him or they take on that move, he really doesn't have another move. So that's why he would be drafted much later. But one thing that he does well is because he has that burst, he does get off the ball well. He does engage people well, and that can really help against the run. Again, he's quick. I like his lower body strength, but he's overall, he's not a guy that I'm going to pick and say, hey, you know what, you're jumping right in there. Honestly, coming in, and this is why you should pick edge rusher later, coming in, you know, the Steelers are going to be looking at Ola Adini and Tuzar Skipper at those edge rushing positions. So Willex kind of falls right in that range. So moving down the line, he got Terrence Steele, offensive tackle, and then the last pick, David Dow, at safety. So, you know, two interesting picks there. You get a tackle and a safety, two guys that can come into camp, be camp bodies. And if you win a spot, you win a spot. If you don't, you don't. But bottom line is, you got Clyde Edwards-Helaire at running back. That's a win. Jalen Hurts at quarterback. That's a win. KJ Hill, I think that's a good spot for in the fourth round. If I had my pick at wide receiver, I might be looking at Michael Pittman. I might be looking at some speedy guys. You know, I really think that there's a good chance that Donovan Peoples-Jones of Michigan could fall, because if you look at his production, he didn't really pop off the scales for Michigan. And I know people might say, oh, that's Shea Patterson. But you look at the other receivers and what they did with the stats with Shea Patterson, you have to wonder what happened to Donovan Peoples-Jones. Now, he had an impressive combine, so maybe that makes other people jump at him. But you know, I'd go with a Chase Claypool if he's still hanging around in that middle round area. And when you get to that first pick in the fourth round, that's a good pickup right there. Him or Michael Pittman, and maybe they're gone by then. But don't sleep on also Antonio Gandy-Golden. I really like his height and what he brings there. He made an impressive catch in the Senior Bowl. Wow. You know, when you think about it, the Senior Bowl was one of the last games of football we've seen. Well, last game of all sports that we've seen. A super late pick that I think that all you guys should consider, Juwan Jennings of Tennessee. Guy's a playmaker. He's bigger. I like what he brings to the table. Just some other options out there. So, again, Bob, thanks for playing, and congratulations on your win. Be sure, everyone, thanks for participating. We had a lot of participants this week, a lot of guesses, and a lot of mocks. So be sure to tune in next week with your pick. If you're in the Facebook group, Locked On Steelers, just go to Facebook, search Locked On Steelers, ask to join. I'll add you as soon as possible. You can get in on all the fun. I'll make a mock draft Monday post this upcoming Friday for next Monday's show to see if you can pick the best mock draft that gets your name on the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, my name is Chris Carter, the host of Locked On Steelers and NFL analyst for DKPittsburghSports.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter at Carter Critiques. If you follow me, I'll follow you back. Hit me with @him in the DM. Always down to chat with you guys. Thanks for those who do chat with me all the time. A lot of people ask a lot of questions. Don't be afraid to ask me questions. I will not big time you. Now, if I don't respond, it just means I'm really busy. But it's not because of a lack of concern for you guys. I really appreciate everyone who contributes. Also got a new review here from Mel Dargs, who gives 5 stars. The Steelers podcast. Love the podcast. Chris is fantastic. Tony Tuesday hot takes are bananas. Always a good time. Thank you, Mel Dargs. Salute you for the 5-star review. And if you want your 5-star review read on this show along with your name, as long as it's safe for work, I will do so. Just go to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review for this show, and I will put your review on this show. Thanks to all those who do that. It really helps me get out the word about what we're doing here at Locked On Steelers. With that, tomorrow's Tuesday, which means it's Tony Tuesday. So we're going to have a lot to talk about. I'll get his opinions on the moves, and we'll have a little bit of fun with what's going on in the NFL. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.